Blog Talk Radio.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the breaks ain't hurting me. Gain on a bomb. I got my world rocked and introduced to my best friend. At that point I realized my path to be is to be the best father I could possibly be. Then I held you for the first time, I saw in your face that you knew who I was, that you felt so safe. Make no mistake, because I felt safe too. The way you fit right in my arms, it was like face true. You're meant for great things, I could tell you gon' rise. Because your eyes so alive, they as blue as the skies. I wouldn't lie, you're the reason I breathe. Because you smile so bright, the sunshine that I need. Yes, you're my little man, kissing on your little hand. Listen, you my shining star, proving there's a bigger plan. You're my crown jewel, my pride, my treasure. It's me, you and your mom, we're together forever.
You're my pride and joy.
You're my life, you're my baby boy.
You're my pride and joy.
Don't be scared, when you need me, just call and I'll be right there.
You're my pride.
Day I changed, the day I claimed, the best day to clear my reign. I used to be filled with just anger and pride. Now it's just pride for you, no more anger inside. Between you and your mom, I learned the meaning of love, the needing of hugs. Above, I see the meaning of doves. Oh yes, I'll protect you and guide you from harm. And nothing's better than the feelings when I hold you in my arms. When times are hard and the clouds are gray, I see you smile and realize life will be okay. Before you, it was just me and all that time, but now it's us, so trust, everything's just fine. My little prince.
Hey guys, good evening, how are you? That's my new song I tried out today, that's called My Baby Boy, and that was actually by Sacrifice. We'll actually get to hear the rest of it later on. He actually wrote that to his son. So I want to welcome everybody. Mountain Man, hello, how are you? Thank you for stopping by. I see you're in our chat room. We're actually going to have him stop by a little bit later and say hi. We have guest 2255. Welcome. Nice to have you. Guest 2260. Real quick, we're going to patch through Cardiac. He is at the Boston Music Awards, and let me get him on the air real quick. See if we can patch him through. He's actually over there. He's working with 617 Live, and he will be sharing some of the stuff that's going on. He'll actually be here on Monday, so he'll cover even more of that for us. But we seem to have a little technical difficulties here. We're trying to get him to come on. Let's see if he's there. Seems we have a slow connection. Seems that everybody is on the internet or I don't know what they're up to. Cardiac, are you there? Oh, we seem to have lost him. Hopefully he'll be calling us back. See if I can get him on there. I guess not. What happened? We lost him. Well, I apologize for that. Hopefully he'll be calling me back. Cardiac, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome. Welcome. How is it going?
Exactly, correction. It's the Boston Music Conference.
I am sorry. That's right. It's the Boston Music Conference. I don't know why I have the Boston Music Awards. That's not going to be for another couple months, right?
December. I just talked to Malik Williams, one of the guys putting it together. He actually was down there doing events for things. Just there was a lot of classes, a lot of workshops, a lot of bio information for upcoming artists. Met a lot of great people. Q Parker from 112 was in the building. A couple Grammys in the building. Just ridiculous people here. G-Unit's marketing manager of the building. So it's fun. I will have a VIP reception tonight at 10 p.m. at Mojitos.
So you guys are having the VIP reception at 10 o'clock at Mojitos, and that's because of the Boston Music Conference.
Yep, and that's exclusive. Like, anybody who paid for the conference is going to be there for that hour reception. I'll give you details that you know what happened. And last night was great. They also have the party. A lot of showcases. People really blew my mind. was a couple of guys that really, really were good. Mm-hmm. Did many deals out of it. Split and Slide A&Rs were here. Universal A&Rs were here.
That's
here yesterday. So, pretty big.
So we were talking on a couple of our past shows about how the film industry is actually growing here in the Massachusetts area, but from what you're telling me, the music scene's really up and coming as well. I mean, Boston's always been like the hidden gem of music. We have a lot of independent artists in all genres, rap, R&B. We have Wilda Mendez. I got to give her a shout out because you finally got to hear her. We met her at the Grammy Mixer a couple
she
months
killed
ago.
Me yesterday, yeah, she was real good.
Yeah, so I'm going to reach out for her and get her on my show. I also have this lady, Deborah Scantulo. I probably destroyed your name. I'm sorry, Deborah. But she's introducing me to a little girl. She's 16 years old. She's got an amazing voice. We're going to have her on the show as well. You're going to be on the show on Monday sharing some of your adventures that you're going through and the things you're venturing out. Yes, your shenanigans. I mean, you started in the music and somehow you've been kind of drafted into acting, producing, writing. I mean, there's a little bit of everything going on with you right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying.
So you're going to show all of what?
Oh, no. We'll be saying I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, no problem. So I just wanted to reiterate to people that you are at the Boston Music Conference, which is all the shakers and makers of the music industry. As a matter of fact, there's talks on the table that we're actually trying to get an office from the Recording Academy in Boston as well. That's something that we're going to be working on. So just thank you for stopping by and let us know what's going on. Have fun at Mojitos tonight.
Because there was a lot of... It's a thing that's like the music industry is blowing up. There are a ton of people from out of town, people from the Bronx, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Philly. Like, they all came down. A lot of the artists weren't from around here. And I just think it's crazy that Boston has become like a beacon for stuff.
That's excellent. Welcome, Recon 55. Love that name. Thank you for stopping by. So thank you very much for stopping by, real quick, Cardiac. You're going to share more of your stuff. We're going to be on the show Monday at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. I'll be in full party mode then.
Excellent. Are you going to bring some of your radio-friendly mixes? Because I know you're so talented. You have all types of music out there, and you have some really amazing stuff you're going to share with us. So thank you for stopping by, letting our listeners know he will be here for the whole hour on Monday at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You can call in if you have any questions, comments, or just would like to know more about the up-and-coming music industry in the Massachusetts, New England area. Cardiac will be in the house. Give us a website.
www.cpcrboston.com. It's cardiac.com. www.myspace.com. CPRBoston is the MySpace. And just Google me, K-A-H-D-I-A-K. Check it out. I'll give you guys details on Monday. I can't give you all the details now. So I'm off to get a record deal. So
okay.
You guys stay positive.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.
All right. Bless you.
Blessings. Mountain Man says that's awesome. Great that he's in there. So now we have someone else that's going to be coming by in a little bit. His name is Mel. And Mel Alejandro actually happens to be married to me, but one of the reasons that I'm going to have him on the show is the fact that he has a real interesting story to share, the kind of background he's come from. He actually, you know, he grew up in the type of neighborhoods where it's not known for saying, oh, yeah, I grew up in this neighborhood, I'm going to go to Harvard, I'm going to go to Yale, I'm going to go to a college. A lot of these kids in this neighborhood can barely make it out of high school, not because the desire is not there. It's just sometimes the support system isn't there. The area at that time, some of the school systems the school system had a bit of a challenge. So, yeah, he's going to be coming on later on the show. We'll just wait for him to call in so we can patch him through and then have him share some of his stories. We'll ask some questions if any of our listeners have any questions for him or for me or would like to share anything. The number is 347-989-1473. 347-989-1473. Or you can actually log online, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman. And the spelling for woman is WMN. And you can join onto our chat room and also ask questions that way and share with us. So while I'm waiting here, I'd like to let you know what's going on in the area. As most of you, I don't know if you know, there's actually a movie being filmed in Massachusetts. We talked about it, how the movie industry is coming into the area. So they're filming this movie, Wichita, with Tom Cruise, and he's actually been seen around. Cameron Diaz is in it. So I've actually been a little bit involved with that, so I can't share too much because, it's just not fair to the production to divulge too much. But one of the cool things is it's public information. They're actually doing an airplane crash scene. And it's interesting that they actually brought a real plane, the chassis of a plane, and they put it out in a field in Bridgewater. And they're actually it's simulating a car plane crash. And it's going to be out there. They're actually going to blow it up tonight. You know what? That's exciting to see, but I really don't want to be the neighbors in Bridgewater because they're actually going to blow it up sometime around midnight, around there, between midnight and 2 in the morning. And that's going to be an interesting sight to see. So that's going to be an amazing movie from what I've seen, some of the stuff that they're doing. It's going to be really exciting, and it's really going to highlight some of the newer things in Boston, like the Zakim Bridge, which if none of you have ever seen it, you have to Google it. At night, it is amazing with the pictures and the design. It's a technological wonder. It really is, because the way they designed it, every time I drive through it, I have to ask myself, how does this thing just suspend there? It just looks so amazing. All right, so we have Mel on the line. We're going to get him on the air and see if we can patch him through. You can tell I'm so new at this. I'm still like, okay, let's see if we can get you on.
Hello.
Mel, are you on?
Hello?
Hey, welcome. How are you?
Good, yourself. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for joining us this evening. Well, it's actually still afternoon, I guess, technically, because it's 6 o'clock. How are you today?
We're doing good. Looks like a nice day. Enjoyed it.
Great. Mountain Man says hello and welcome. He wants to welcome you to the show as well. So, Mel, I just wanted to ask you, and for most of the listeners that don't know, we are married, and you have, I know you don't think you do, but I, because I see so much of it, you do have some interesting things that you've done now. Of the neighborhood you grew up, you want to give us some background as far as, you know, how you grew up, where you came from, that kind of stuff?
Well, you know what? This is the Ordinary People show. I guess I'm ordinary, but how can I start? It's just a regular neighborhood. My parents moved to Massachusetts when I was 5 years old, and they moved to, you know, the only places they knew. They weren't the best in the area. We ended up moving several times, I think like 12 times in 12 times in 8 years or something.
Now, let me stop you there real quick. If you're moving around 12 times in 8 years, you're a young child, you're going to school, how did that affect your actual schooling? Did you get moved around to different schools, or did you wind up staying in the same school? How did that happen?
Well, I think I ended up going to 8 different schools in junior high. Well, that's one school for every year. So, yeah, it did affect myself and my brothers a little bit.
Mel, I don't mean to interrupt you, but our listeners, one of them was nice enough to say they need you to speak up just a little bit.
Okay, I'll speak up.
There we go. That's the voice. So you wind up going to 8 different schools, you said, as well, during junior high?
Yeah. It was exciting, but it was also hard because they had to make new friends all the time, and some of the areas weren't as nice as others. And some of the kids didn't really want to make friends. They were, you know, very territorial when I was growing up.
So how did that affect your actual learning, your academics? I mean, did you feel like you were catching up all the time? How did that make you feel as far as trying to catch up or even stay on top of what you were doing?
I think it was just catch up all the time, just catching up. And then some areas we went to, we might have been ahead a little bit. But most of the time, it was just catching up, and it was, it could get frustrating at times. But, you know, at the time, you don't know. You think that's normal. You think that's the way everybody does it. So I didn't really give it any thought until, you know, you asked the question.
Now, my other question to you is, so here you are, you're moving around, and the neighborhood isn't exactly the best. What motivated you to want to even bother with high school?
The neighborhood did.
Okay. So that was an incentive.
Oh, big time incentive. You know, you when you
grow up and everything around you is not really that great, and then and you have TV shows that are showing you kind of how normal things are, not really normal, but things can be different. And then you have friends who live in different areas, and you share experiences with them. You stay over, you meet their family, you meet their friends and neighborhood. And you're like, well, there is something else out there besides what I see. So you start to strive for those things. You start looking for that, and you get that little burn inside that you're like, wait a minute, this is the only thing out here. There's other stuff out there that I can actually do.
Okay, so real quick, if anybody wants to call in a little bit as we get more into it, if you have any questions for Mel, the number is 347-989-1473, or you can log on to www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman. Woman is spelled WMN, and you can go right into our chat room and post questions or comments. Now, I have to ask you, a lot of times I know for me, because I grew kind of a little bit similar, not as rough as you had it, but how did you manage to look at high school as an alternative or a way out, whereas most kids think of high school as just a waste of time because they don't really think they're going to go anywhere? I mean, they see television, they see that too, but to them it's like, you know what, why am I even going to bother? I'm just going to wind up in the factory with my dad, my mom, whatever. But you actually, your thinking was that if I can make it through these 4 years of high school, you would get out. But what made you think that making it through those 4 years was a way out?
Well, believe it or not, my mother was a big influence. My sisters were a big influence on me. I had a couple that were still going to college or trying to. And that was one of the factors there. And every time I looked around, I was a good listener. I'm very shy. I don't do a lot of speaking. I don't do a lot of talking. But I'm a good listener. And I try to observe everything around me. So I kept sizing things up, because where you live, you size things up. You don't you size people up when they come at you. You don't know what's going to happen, so you size them up. So I use the word size up. I sized up the fact that if I stayed where I was, if I kept doing the things I was doing, the things that I saw when I lived, and that's where I'm going to end up, and I'm end up living, the things that I'm going to end up doing. So gradually I started to, look into things, sizing them up and going, wait a minute, if I want to accomplish this, then this is how I have to act, this is where I have to be, this is where I'm going to get my my inspiration, I guess. And I had a lot of good, I was really into sports. That's one of the things that kept me out of trouble most of the time.
Stop here real quick. I'm going to ask you now, you said you were good at sports. Do you think that's what helped you? Because you just mentioned you were in 8 different junior highs, so obviously academics was, not that you, that it it was hard for you, but it was challenging because being moved around so much. Do you think sports is what kept you grounded, and what kind of sports did you play?
Well, sports definitely kept me grounded. Right away, I had to make friends in any sport that I played. I played football. I played basketball and baseball. So I had to make friends right away and, assimilate to what's going on in that area. And I had a couple of coaches that were really good mentors. They actually took the time to talk to me as a human being, and ask me questions, and give me a little bit of knowledge, and say, look, kid, if you continue to do what you're doing in this area and stay out of trouble, then you might be able to, catch the eye of somebody. We will give you a hand if you continue to help yourself. We'll pass on the word to the other coaches and the other people that you're basically a hardworking kid that wants to better himself.
Now, you played what sports? You played baseball, you played basketball at the high school level. You also played football when you were in junior high, you mentioned?
Yeah, in junior high they had, it wasn't called Pop Warner. It was just, if you were from the age of, I don't remember, let's say 10 to 15, you can play on the team. And I played in that, they called it the junior league. That was a junior football league. And then I got hurt there. And then when I went to high school, the kids really got big.
I have to stop you right there because let's give the listeners a little background now. You went to a major inner city school, had what, like 5,000 students at least?
Yeah.
So you, here you are now, just to give them a little background, you mentioned it, and you do that a lot jokingly. Your freshman year of high school, you were 5'0", you said, like 110 pounds soaking wet, and you walked on to try out for the varsity baseball team and basketball team.
Well, you go try out, but really it was for freshman basketball and freshman baseball. And I knew the coach, one of the coaches from junior high. He used to coach at the well, he was one of the athletic directors at the Robinson Junior High School. And when I got up to the high school level, he asked me to come out for the team. But at that point, like I said, I weighed 110 pounds soaking wet, maybe 5'2.5". I was still growing, and the year before, I had broken my collarbone playing in the junior football league because a couple of big guys fell on me.
So you're on the mend from a broken collarbone, and you go in there to try out for the basketball team. What did the coach say? What were some of the reactions you got? Because I'm imagining here is this tiny little man, tiny little boy actually, because you were what, like 13 years old at that level, and you're walking onto this basketball team tryout in this high school with, like, so there had to be what, at least 200 people trying out at that time?
Yeah, freshman basketball is freshman basketball, JV and varsity is pretty huge at Lowell High. Yeah, there was a lot of kids trying out. When I went out there, I still had my broken collarbone. I had my this is a little thing they give you, a little strap that they put around you to straighten you out and keep you from hurting your collarbone. But what I did is I put a couple of extra shirts on, put a real big heavy shirt on, and the coach couldn't tell. Only two of my friends that were trying out knew I had a broken collarbone, and I told them, don't tell the coach anything because he won't put me on the team. He won't pick me. He won't give me a tryout.
So you walked onto this team. Now, this is what our listeners have to get across, because to me, I've heard this story I don't know how many times. It still boggles my mind. You're 5'0", 110 pounds. You walk into this high school with over 200-something kids to a basketball tryout, so they have you doing suicides. They have you running around. Obviously, you have to shoot the ball. You have to rebound, you have to man up, you're doing all this stuff with a broken collarbone, and the coach never noticed till later on.
Yeah, he didn't notice. But yeah, the hardest thing for me was doing a suicide. So a suicide, you got to bend down, and when you do the suicide, you do like four lines, and you run back and bend down, and the shooting wasn't that bad because I'm right-handed. It was my left collarbone that was broken. And a couple of times, a couple of kids gave me a couple of blind picks on the left side, and I really felt it, but I didn't say much. But what happened was at one of the plays, I had a layup, and one of the kids really took me out. I hit the wall, came down, and, you know, it was a good yell. And two of my friends went over and wanted to just wail on this kid because they knew what was going on. The kid, that poor kid didn't know what was going on.
He didn't have a clue.
And they wanted to go over there, and now, you know, we're starting a ruckus. I'm like, hey, calm down, don't worry. And one of them blurted it out, yeah, coach, he has a broken collarbone. The kid's whatever. And now the coach just stopped and looked at me and said, is that true? I said, yeah, but, it's in my last week or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and he just told me, all right, son, just have a seat over there, and I'll speak to you later. And I thought that was it. I thought I wasn't going to get on the team.
But you did wind up making the team.
Oh, yeah. After he said, you know what, kid, if I can get a kid out here trying out with a broken collarbone, you're on my team. I need somebody that can actually, you know. He's just amazed. That was everyday occurrence for me, though. I still had to go to school. I had to do the things I had to do, so I saw nothing big about it, and that's what I keep telling you. You keep bringing it up. I don't know why.
Well, I don't know, but if I had a busted collarbone, I think I'd be in bed crying for 6 weeks because I'm such a big baby, and you're not going to get me to run around and do suicide, that's for sure. So you made the freshman team freshman year,
yep.
And sophomore year you played what, JV or varsity?
I played JV. Yeah, I still hadn't grown anything.
And then junior year, senior year, you played varsity?
Yes, my junior year I finally grew. I was probably 5'4.5", man. And I grew, I gained a little bit more weight, and I made the varsity team.
So my amazing thing that I need to ask is the fact that, I mean, we won't mention any names, obviously, because it's not nice and that was it. But in theory, one of the coaches, I think, was a junior year or senior, didn't even want you on the team, was trying to get you to quit.
Well, you got to understand, you know, if you have a team and the starting center is 6'7", and you got another one who's the other forward, small forward, 6'7", and then they shoot one of the other forward, 6'3", and then you have a 5-0 player, you want to up the attic, you know what I mean? You want to level off the team. So he was trying to get someone to do the job I was doing, who was a little bigger.
But in theory, so what wind up happening, actually, your other teammates kind of stepped up to the plate and say, he's doing the job, he's really good at it, he's part of the team. As a matter of fact, the other players even made you team captain and basically said to the coach, if he doesn't play, we don't.
Well, I had a lot of good friends, and at 5'4", you have to be technically sound, and you have to know you kind of like have a lot of technical ball playing skills, because you know you have to jump 4 feet higher than everybody. You have to do a lot of things technically better. So what I started doing is some of our big guys didn't have the technical down, but it was just big. So I started working with them, and they started getting better. We started getting better. We built a great rapport. And by the time the season started and it was time to pick captains, they picked me as one of the captains because they said that I was, you know, actually taking the time to teach them stuff.
So here you have this 5-foot-nothing guy, as you keep saying, 110. Probably by the time you were was it junior year or senior year they made you captain? Senior year?
That was my senior year.
So senior year, you were what, maybe 5'3"? And you've actually grown a little bit more. Did you sprout up, or what height do you think you were in senior?
I think I was 5'5" by then, but they had me at like 5'9" on the...
Okay, so here you are. You're still 5'5". You're maybe bulked up to 140, 130, if more, less.
125, maybe?
125, and they made you the captain in this varsity team. And to give our listeners a feel, your team actually qualified for regionals, championships. What did they qualify for? Because they actually went beyond their division.
Oh, yeah, that's not, I wouldn't put it that way. But it's they have the schoolboy basketball Boston Globe, and they ranked us after a Christmas tournament that we had. And having the big monsters that we had, we beat up on a couple of teams in the Christmas tournament. And they ranked us either in this area or in the state. They ranked us number one boys basketball team, just ranked. That didn't mean anything at the time. But then as the year went by, we ended up going to the, regionals or something. We ended up losing, but we ended up winning the Merrimack Valley, I believe, or tying it with somebody. And then we ended up losing against Don Bosco at the time was a powerhouse, and they ended up winning, I believe, the state championship that year.
So here you're downplaying the championship you were in, yet anybody that's familiar with the Massachusetts area knows that Don Bosco was a powerhouse, because at that time, Don Bosco, for those that aren't familiar, was an all-boys school. And as a matter of fact, it was a private school who heavily recruited not only academics but athletics as well. So they had the pick of the litter, come to say, and here you went up against this powerhouse. And they were actually the ones that you guys lost to, and they're the ones that actually went on to win the championship. But so it gives the listeners something to gauge by the level of play that was going on. Now, one of our listeners wanted to know, what other sports did you participate in while you were at the high school?
I ended up playing baseball because football. I didn't want to get hurt, and I wanted to really play basketball and baseball, so I didn't play football. Ended up playing baseball.
Did you play baseball your freshman year as well?
Yes, I did.
Varsity, freshman, JV?
I went out for the freshman. My freshman year, I went out for freshman, but the coach put me on the JV team. So
you made the JV team your freshman year?
Right, as a freshman, that's right.
Okay, real quick, not to interrupt you, but guest 2374, welcome. Very nice of you to stop by our chat room. Just real quick, if you guys want to call in, if you have any questions or comments, the number is 347-989-1473. My guest tonight is Mel Alejandro. he actually is sharing some of the stories of his childhood. I mean, well, more kind of like his adolescence and the motivation that kept him in high school, growing up in a neighborhood that really wasn't known for cultivating boys that wanted to go to high school and beyond. And he was just sharing some of his adventures at the high school where he wound up playing at the varsity level for basketball, which, again, being a small in stature, was unheard of. And it was a very good team at the time, even though he downplays it. Now, when you were playing baseball, you made the JV team your freshman year. What did you play sophomore, junior, and senior year?
My sophomore year, once again, they were saying I was small. So I was on the JV team, but what happened that year is we had a great, great varsity team, and they made it to the States. And at the end of the year, you're familiar with seniors going on senior trips, you know, the prom, and they got schools to go check out and everything else. So I think it was the last couple of games, two or three games, they needed someone in the outfield, and my coach told them that they moved me up to varsity as a sophomore.
All right, so once again, you're downplaying your talent and your ability, and here you are, a sophomore, and you got bumped up to the varsity level, again, in this big school, right? Now,
yeah.
Junior year, you played varsity?
Yeah.
Or a combination of both?
No, my junior year, I played varsity. I started varsity, and I started varsity the whole year. But going back to my sophomore year, we had such a great team that we made it to the state tournament. And in the state tournament, a couple of guys got hurt, and a couple of guys got sick. And that was what they call somebody they bring up as a bench player. So I got to play in three of those games. I got to go in there for defensive purposes and, you know, a couple of running things. I was a little faster than the big guys. So they put me in there for a couple of running situations. And that was a great ride because the team, ended up being a part of Eastern Mass regional, this region, we were the champs in this region, and then we ended up losing to Brockton, Powerhouse Brockton, which went to the States and won that too, won the States there, so, you know, we came close there.
So you actually got to be in the state championship game, well, at the state championships games your sophomore year. That must have been an amazing experience. And then your junior and senior year, what level did you play varsity as well? And
yeah, I played varsity. I was a starter for both years. We didn't go as far, and we made the states, I believe, my junior year. And my senior, we didn't make the states, but we didn't go as far my junior year. We just hadn't had the pitching talent that we had before. But it was a great team, and the area of baseball is the top-notch area of baseball. It's Division I baseball. As a matter of fact, one of the guys that we played against from Burlington High School, his name was, I think it was, his last name was Smith. He ended up in the major leagues. I forget which team. The other guy who everybody knows, real famous, he played for Billerica. We played against him, was Tommy Glavin. And at that point in high school, he was already throwing 88 miles an hour, when we faced him. And we beat him a couple times.
Real quick, we have a caller for you, Mel. I'm going to go over to here. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is David from Utah.
Hey, David from Utah, how are you?
Doing
thanks
real
for
well.
You
I
to
had
call.
A question for Mel.
Okay.
I've had a chance to meet you, and I know that, I hope I'm not jumping the gun. I know you went on to do law enforcement professionally, and I wanted to hear kind of the correlation that Mel found between maybe what skills he learned in high school sports and then applying them in his professional career, if he felt like some of those things came naturally or if he had to make, you know, some concerted efforts to be able to apply some of those skills or how it crossed over for him professionally.
Mel?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. It helped me immensely because law enforcement is just like being in a huge team, you know what I mean? Just like being on a team.
Yeah.
You need to be a team player at all times. It's not about you most of the time. It's always about what's the best thing for the team. And I'm saying team as also a force. You take hits, you know, you take hits for your teammates, you take hits for the other people. And that man, that was worth its weight in gold, because I have a lot of great friends on where I work. I respect them, and it just made things that much easier. The transition was very easy, real easy.
That's a pretty comprehensive answer, and that's kind of what I imagined. And I had one other question, and I'll take my answer off the air to this one, if that's okay. Is that okay?
That's fine, David. Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to ask. I've had a chance to meet Mel, and I wanted to. I noticed he's a really open and accepting person. He was really quick to kind of just be friendly, and I imagine that probably came somewhat from having to meet so many new people all the time. And I wanted to say, if now looking back in hindsight, if he felt like all the constant moving around when he was young, did that turn out to be something that socially enabled him to be more open to things like that? And if he saw that as an advantage, or still if he wished he'd had a little bit more stability in that time.
Oh, no, definitely an advantage. I had a lot of stability in the home. My father was a working fool. He was working. My mother was a homebody. She was always there. My brothers and I were always pretty close, really tight. So that did not affect my home life. But, yeah, it was a great advantage. That allowed me to see when other people come into the area, how I kind of know how they're feeling, and let them know, look, we're the same no matter where you go, no matter what color, what creed, how heavy, how small, athletic, non-athletic, we're all the same. We have something in common, and we could always find something good in somebody and get along with them, And that was a great advantage to me. And the best part is, if you knew me when I was growing up, I was the shyest kid. I still am shy inside and introverted, but I was the shyest kid around, and that really helped me immensely to reach out to other people and actually read into them. And like I said earlier, size them up. Size them up and say, okay, this is the type of person I'm dealing with, so that way I can approach him in a manner that would be friendly to him. Yeah, that was a great advantage to me, and that was a great thanks for the question.
Thank you. This is a great guest. I was happy to hear this. I'll go.
You were. Is that Recon 55?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Have a good one. So now you get yourself through high school, and what made you decide that there was – what went on after for you?
Well, like I said, a lot of great mentors. One of the teachers told me to read a certain book. I wasn't a big reader, but he gave me a book to read. And The Power of Positive Thinking. And it was something that wasn't normal to me, and it was out of the ordinary, and I kind of took it to heart, and I said, wow, I can do that. That's pretty easy. And then from there, I started asking people, what are my chances of doing this? What are my chances of doing that? And they said, oh, slim to none. And I've always been the person, if you say I can't do something, then I end up doing it. I take that as a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take that as a challenge. So, what was one of the things that really got me? My parents prepared me for, being a good father, good son, good brother, but they didn't prepare me in terms of education. You know what I mean? My mother, I don't think she ever went to school. She might have gone to the third grade. My father barely graduated high school. Because of their times, they had to get out and go work. And then here I am. I can't come home. Nobody can help me with homework. I'd have to find people to help tutor me in school and find girls that were very nice and help me out, because the boys are never nice. And, that's kind of what gave me that. But what I'm getting at is I ended up getting a bunch of letters from baseball and basketball for little schools in the area that said, hey, we want you to come to our school. I'm like, wow, that's great. And then they asked me the worst question they could ever ask me, is, what's your grade point average? And I'm like, uh-oh. So when it came to the grade point average, and I didn't know what to do, so I ran, I grabbed the letters, I ran to my counselor and said, I want to go to school. What do I need to do? Counselor looks at the at my grade point average. He goes, you know what? United States Marine Corps is going to be here next week. I suggest you sign up there because that's all you have, kid. There's nothing else out for you here. That's all you can do. And that really, really got me mad.
So here you are. You're this young, talented kid. You're good at sports. You're trying your hardest academically. And we're going back. This is like in the late 70s, early 80s. And you go to your guidance counselor because you have no one else to turn to. And his answer to you was, the recruiter's coming next week. That's about it for you.
Yeah.
That was the extent of the help you got there.
Yeah, my coach, who's a teacher also, gave me the letters, but he didn't go any further. He thought I had the people at home that would help me, but you know, the letter said, you know, we want you to come up and look at our campus, bring your parents. You know, we'll spend the weekend with us, all this other stuff. And I'm like, I don't know who I'm going to bring up there. I'm going to bring my brother up there. My mother doesn't speak English. My father is working all weekend. I can't bring him up there. So I went to the counselor, and that's what he told me. And that's right there. That was a turning point in my life where I said, I'm not going to let anybody ever tell me or dictate what I want to do, because I was full of fire and energy at the time. I wanted to be something that, you know, I wanted to be out of the norm. Where I was, and I wanted to make myself someone better than what I saw around me and the things that I knew at the time.
So you wind up actually finding out about a program that was offered by San Jose State College, and you wind up doing what to be able to get involved with them and go to school there.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because what I did is I applied to San Jose State College. I applied to a couple little colleges around. Because I wanted to play basketball and I wanted to play baseball, and they were good basketball, baseball places. That's my mentality. Let me go. If I can play baseball, basketball, then the grades, I'll get them up, because in order to play, you have to have good grades. So that was my way to keep myself honest on the grades. So what happened is I applied, of course, because of my GPA at the time, and then I took the first time we ever heard of my senior year. They go, oh, you have to take an SAT test. I'm like, a Saturday test? What's that?
You're like, I don't want to get up early on Saturday to go take a test.
Yeah, that's a, you know, to me it was a Saturday test. I'm like,
okay. Oh, man.
So I take that and I bomb it, of course.
You think? Oh, man.
Yeah, I think I wrote my name right.
So you got the 200.
Right. And then all the colleges said, you know, we can't do anything for you. You know, you're not going to make it out here. You are not going to make it out here. You don't have what it takes.
But you did wind up being able to get into Salem State College, and you actually shared the story that you wind up spending actually your whole first year in college catching up to all the stuff that you missed from all the moving around.
Well, how long is this show, man?
Oh, you're moving a lot quicker than you think. You're like, I can't talk for an hour, and you've been going. We're not even halfway through some of the stuff you've done.
You know what? The only reason I'm talking because you're my wife. Otherwise, you know I wouldn't do this.
I know. He's giving me the look like, you better never ask me to do this again. So you did go to Salem State, and
yeah.
I know you're going to kill me, but you actually made the dean's list after a year of really trying to catch up and do what you know how to do.
All right, I'll put my stuff out there. Sorry, but what happened was, the San Jose State College had a program called the AIDS program, AID, and it stands for Alternative Individual Development Services or Learning, something like that. And they sent me a letter and said, hey, if you're still interested, you got to come up here and you got to take the test. So of course,
there goes the test again.
Was that testing stuff? So the girl on the line says, just come on up. Don't worry about it. So Saturday morning, I go up there. I think it was during the week. I drive down to Salem, which is about 45 minutes from Lowell, and I take this test. I meet this lady, and she says, don't worry, just take your time, do the test. No matter what, let's see what happens. And I guess I ended up scoring just high enough or just low enough to get into the grade where they
oh,
can
man, yeah.
This guy can go.
So that actually would work in your favor, that you actually were in between there so that you did get into the program.
Well, years later, I found out that that testing put you into three different categories. You know, kids that are just barely not passing the GPA to get into the college, kids that are like, you know, did all right but goofed off, and then they had the kids like me, where it's like, why are you attempting to go to college?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, because I want to get as much as I can in the little time we have left, I just wanted to, so you went to college, you actually left before graduation because you wind up taking a test to join the state police. They actually called you, you wind up in the academy, and that was the reason why you didn't finish. But then you actually, once you graduated from the state police academy and got your police career going, you went back and you got your bachelor's degree in what, criminal justice?
Yeah, that's correct. So what happened is I get into this program, I find all these great people, great mentors, that said, if you do X, Y, and Z, just like drawing a playbook for me, if you do X, Y, Z,
mm-hmm.
you'll graduate. So that was the best game plan I ever got. So I went out there and I did X, Y, and Z. But what happened is when I was 18 years old, had a friend of mine who is a correctional officer now, and he really wanted to be in the state police, and he loved it, and says, hey, why don't you accompany me? I'm taking this test, same thing, in the morning.
You and your test in the morning.
And we're gonna accompany me to this test, and I just want you to be my support. I don't care, you know, we had to pay like 10 bucks or something. I don't know if we had to pay, it was free, but you can take it too, and, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'll take the test. I had no idea. You know, I know it was a police exam. So 3 years later, I get called from that exam. And they said, hey, are you still interested in that job you applied for when 3 years ago? I'm like, what was that? And I checked into it, and it was the Massachusetts State Police. I had passed the exam. They had put in a couple of classes before the one I got in, because it takes about a year and a half to get a class in. And they put in two classes before, three, and then they were at the end of the, what they call them, we're at the bottom of the list here, kid, once again. We're at the bottom of the list, and your name came up. And I went and spent 6 months there, and that was the start of my career there.
So real quick, for the listeners that don't know, just because you take the written exam doesn't automatically qualify you. That just means, okay, you pass the test, you can read, you can answer certain questions, and you scored a certain amount. Then from there, you get put into the pool, and you have to pass physical agility, which means you can run, do all that stuff. They test you for that. You have to do psychological testing. You have to do medicals, drug testing, credit checks, background checks. And then after you pass all of that, you have to go in front of an oral review board where you have like 10 or 15 of the upper echelon of the police department basically asking you whatever questions they want. And you specified earlier how shy you were. What made you be able to talk to these people? I mean, you made it through the whole process, which weeds out a lot of people. So you, there you are, the top of the list of who's probably going to get hired, and you're in front of all these guys. And what did you dig deep down into to be able to look them in the eye, answer questions without stuttering over yourself or just breaking down?
Because they said I couldn't do it.
That would do it. That would definitely do it. Don't tell me I can't do it, because it's going to happen.
Well, it went like this. The guy that came to do my background check shows up at my mother's apartment, and this is the this is in Lowell, and it's the we call them the Acre. And Acre, that was the projects. A housing project in the Acres, and upstairs, across from the hall from us, it was a lady who was a night walker. Okay, common night walker.
That didn't mean she walked around at night, people. She's a business lady.
Yeah, she solicited people, whatever. And the people downstairs were entrepreneurs also. They sold
pharmaceuticals.
The people upstairs also sold pharmaceuticals. the front of my house was a pharmacy, a street pharmacy. So the guy showed up and knocked on the door, and somebody opened the door and said, we're looking for so-and-so. And they're like, oh, he doesn't live here. And because, you know, the guy's in uniform, he doesn't live here. We don't know where he is. Well, at that time I was in college. I was living in the dorms, and nobody wanted to tell him anything.
We don't know nothing.
You show up at the projects, you're a police officer, nobody knows anything. They think you're dumbing up. And they're like, wow, the good guy went crazy or something out there. So they didn't tell him anything. He left a note and said, look, if he wants this job or interview for it, he better get to back to me tonight before midnight. And, of course, my family still denying they knew me, just left me a phone message down at the school, at my residence hall. And I called the guy back. I ended up meeting this guy at 11:45 p.m. in his barracks. The guy yelled and screamed at me, looked at me and said, you can't be a state trooper. How much do you weigh? You're 5 foot nothing. You weigh less than 100 pounds. I'm recommending nothing for you. And I said, well, and then he went down the list and told me of everyone that had been arrested in my family. And the only ones that hadn't been arrested at the time was my mother and I.
I hate to laugh, but the way you say that, and the sad thing is that it's true. It's so true. And so we've got like less than 10 minutes left, and I just want to cover a little bit more of some of the stuff. And I definitely have to have you back on the show, even though you're looking at me like, no way. But there's just so much more to cover that we just can't do it justice. But just a cover point, because I do have a caller that wants to come on. What do you think you came away with from all that you went through that helped you be able to teach to your children, that made your children the way you are? Because one of the things people say about your children, and that's a whole nother segment. I mean, you could write a book about the dynamics of the family, is how the kids make friends quickly. They're loyal to their friends. They have friends that they've known since junior high, and they're still good friends and stuff. What do you think you were able to convey to them from everything you went through? Because you could have gone to the point that you were bitter and angry and upset about everything you went through, or to the point that, look, this happened to me. This is what you can do with it to make it good. What are some of the life lessons that you were able to share with your children that made them the way they are now?
Well, I always tell them, you know, you never quit. Never quit. Always prepare yourself for whatever it is you want to do, because just because you're not doing it now doesn't mean you're not going to be doing it tomorrow or a couple of days later. You have to be prepared so when an opportunity knocks, it becomes your opportunity. And I always told them, you know, never back down from anything. There's nothing out here scary enough to back down from. And always, always, always fight for what you want. And I mean, you know, I don't mean fist fight, but I mean mentally get yourself in the game and do the things you need to do. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves. People don't mentally get into the game. And they make excuses. And, you know, everybody has excuses, but, you know, you can make excuses or you can take action to get rid of those excuses. That's one of the things I've try to show them.
That's excellent. And now, real quick, I did have another person that was going to be on the show because Mel said to me, there's no way I can talk for an hour, which he just proved us wrong, because I think I could have done a three-hour show on you and we wouldn't have covered everything that you've done. But I do have a cue call, so I'm going to let Mountain Man come on and make a couple of comments because I know he's been very patient waiting on. So let's see if I can get you on here now. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Am I coming out okay there?
Yes, you are. You're coming in loud and clear. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Good, and hello to all that's in the chat room there. And hello to Mel. Good to hear about the story there. And I could definitely agree with Mel about a lot of his sports stories there, because I've also been in a lot of sports myself. I am a person with a disability in a wheelchair, but in my younger years, I was in a lot of sports. Basketball is one of them, and track. I've been in basketball, track and field, all those sports in track and field. the races.
Now, let me stop you real quick, Chris. I want our listeners to know that Chris is actually going to be on our show on October 7th. And Chris has a really, I mean, it's an incredible story. I met Chris a couple years ago through a service company that I was working with. And then when I left my employment, Chris and I remained friends. So we are definitely going to need more than an hour with Chris, because once you get to hear his story, especially when you remember the fact that he just told us that he played sports, you're going to sit there and go, wow. So, yeah, Chris, thank you so much for calling. And like I said, Mel was telling me that he could not possibly have anything to talk about for an hour, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you do. But thank you for being so patient and waiting. So, yeah, you did play sports, didn't you, when you were younger, right?
Yes, I did. I played a lot of sports in quite a few different I played, like you said, basketball. I played tennis. I've done archery. I've done a lot of the track and field events, which I will get into more on the 7th,
right?
Which would be great. And I just thought I'd try to get in there and say hello to all on the show this evening. And
that's excellent. Now, one of Chris's qualities that I love is he loves being prepared. So he's like, well, if I'm going to be on the show on the 7th, I want to make sure I know how it works. So he wanted to make sure he could get into the chat room and wanted to make sure that he knew how to call in and be able to be loud and clear on the air. And that's why we did a dry run. But thank you so much. Hey, Chris, do you have any questions or comments for Mel?
I just am so inspired by your stories, Mel. I met Mel some time ago at one of at a graduation, and the stuff that you guys had put the recruits through was just all inspiring to me, and you guys have made me really happy and shown me what I could do in all aspects.
Aww.
And I really do appreciate you, Mel, for sharing your story there about the sports events. And it is so great to hear your stories, and I look forward to hearing to more of them in the future.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chris. So Chris definitely is going to come back on the 7th, and I can't wait to hear the stories that you're going to be sharing with us and stuff. So we got to wrap it up. We got less than 3 minutes. Recon55, thank you so much for calling. I'm glad you enjoyed the show, and we're definitely going to have Mel back on. We're going to have Chris Dameron. He's going to be here on October 7th. We also will have, let me give you a quick rundown of the people that we have coming up. We're going to be having Cardiac, the musical artist. He's also a family member. That's one of our kids. He's actually going to be here on Monday. He'll be sharing about the music conference and all the things he's up to. Willie Miles, he'll be here on September 30th, an amazing young man from the area. 20 years old, he's already working in management for the Boys and Girls Club. He's also in the acting industry, and he's a writer. Terry Sheehan, she's a real sweet girl. She's one of someone I met from in church years ago, and she is like a bubbly explosion of happiness. I love this girl. And Natalie Girardo, too, she's going to be on the show on the 5th. She's coming from Florida. She's an amazing woman that's dealing with lupus and has done some amazing things. So, Mel, thank you so much for being on our show. Thank you to our listeners, to everybody in our chat room. Thank you for stopping by. Monday, we'll be here at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Oh, there goes the lady in my ear telling me I got 90 seconds. So, yeah, we'll see you guys on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, David, out in Utah, and all my other guests. Thank you for stopping by. Have a great weekend, and I will see you guys on Monday. Have a great one.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And here we go. Good night, guys.
May 14th at 10 past 10. 10, I got my world rocked and introduced to my best friend. At that point, I realized my path to be is to be the best father I could possibly be. Then I held you for the first time, I saw in your face that you knew who I was, that you felt so safe. Make no mistake, because I felt safe too. The way you fit right in my arms, it was like face true. You're meant for great things, I could tell you gon' rise, because your eyes so alive, they as blue as the skies. I wouldn't lie, you're the reason I breathe, because your smile's so bright, the sunshine that I need. Yes, you're my little man, kissing on your little hand. Listen, you my shining star, proving there's a bigger plan. You're my crown jewel, my pride, my treasure. It's me, you, and your mom, we're together forever.
You're my pride and joy.
You're my life, you're my baby boy.
You're my pride and joy.
Don't be scared when you need me, just call and I'll be right there.
You're my pride and joy.
Actually use this just for a call.
All this other stuff you can use.